I really thank Earl for those words and that reading and for these very thoughtful songs that Les is leading us in, and for Ray's comments from the scriptures to focus us on Christ. May we never take for granted what we're able to do every first day of the week. And it will help us and it will transform us if we appreciate it. And so let us never take it for granted. And I do think, and there's probably more to say about this, that in light of the last year, that we do have a natural kind of appreciation now for being with each other and encouraging one another as we worship God together. And so we welcome those who are visiting with us. It's great to see everyone. We appreciate those connected through the live stream who need to stay at home still. And so let us all be grateful for this wonderful opportunity to be with each other. This assertion needs very little backing. If you've been focused on a lot of the information that floats about, and that is that people are struggling in our society with anxiety. Recent study I saw by the American Psychiatric Association reported figures back last October that reflected Americans reporting having significant problems with anxiety was basically double of what it was a year before. And I don't think it's just because of the pandemic and the social and political unrest that's been characterizing our society for over a year. These numbers have actually been climbing for some time. And those who work with young people would tell you, in any kind of setting, that anxiety issues have been on the rise significantly among young people for many years. Now, a lot of people want to blame social media, any kind of electronic device, or some other phenomenon. Almost as if that somehow we've reached a point in our existence as humans that now we have a significant problem with anxiety, as if people before us never had it. It's a very narrow, I would even say ignorant, perspective. If people who lived 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago or even 100 years ago saw us with our advanced medical technologies, the abundance of food that we have, the climate-controlled homes, the rapid and efficient communication and transportation, and they heard us say that we have anxiety, they would laugh at us. The problem is not circumstances. It's really perspective. Certain circumstances can create more anxiety than other circumstances. But dealing with anxiety and whether or not it becomes a burden has to do with perspective. And Jesus addressed fear and anxiety in the Gospel of Luke, the 12th chapter. And so I invite you to consider with me what Jesus taught in Luke, the 12th chapter. And what he is doing here is not something different than what he does in other places. In general, what Jesus is always doing with his teaching is he's inviting people into the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. He's telling people what they need to become to come into that kingdom. He's telling people of the blessings of that kingdom. He's telling people of the superior way of that kingdom. And that kingdom basically is to make him the king, him as the rock of your life on which you build everything. And he's telling those who would come into the kingdom, especially here in Luke chapter 12, what they mean to God. How God sees them. So read with me, beginning in Luke chapter 12 and verse 4. Luke's Gospel, chapter 12. I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body, and after that have nothing more that they can do. But I will warn you whom to fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? And not one of them is forgotten before God. Why, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not. You are of more value than many sparrows. Jesus here addresses these people, I tell you, friends. He's talking to people who are coming close. He's talking to people who are coming into the kingdom, who are considering the kingdom, who are focused on entering the kingdom. It's much like a lot of the passages that we've been reading in the Psalms, where there is a clear distinction between those who are God's people and those who are not God's people, which is what we saw in that reading this morning at the beginning. And there is a love that God has for all people. But there is a special focused care and a special provision and a special relationship that God has with his people. Those are the people that Jesus is addressing. And isn't it odd that you're like, okay, he's going to talk to us about anxiety today and fear, and the first thing Jesus is talking about is, listen, this is who you need to fear, the one that can throw you into hell. That's sort of shocking, isn't it, that Jesus starts this section here about anxiety and fear by talking about what fear you should have. But he does. It's not humans who can only harm your body and then it's over. It's the one who is the judge of the universe. It's the one who can condemn one's soul to hell, that even after the body ceases to feel pain, continues to be in torment. But it's that same one with that same authority and that same power who turns to his friends, his righteous ones, his faithful ones, turns to those in his kingdom and uses that same authority and power to focus his care on them. And that's why Jesus just shifts right here from talking about those you should fear, the one who should fear, not those you shouldn't fear, but the one you should fear who can throw your soul into hell. And then he begins to talk about God's care for sparrows, which means God cares for you even more. But it's understandable, because it all has to do with the great power of God that can either be used in judgment against us or can be used as a blessing to care for us. And there's the key to managing anxiety. The God who knows every sparrow and every tree, the God who knows how many hairs are on your head. And this is when the preacher always makes a joke about losing his hair. So there you go. There it is. Okay. It's easier for God with me than for other people. But it's the God who even knows that, who remembers you and values you. We might say that a sparrow is a dime a dozen. What Jesus said was that five sparrows for 2 pennies. And penny here just really represents the lowest denomination of coinage that they had at the time. This sermon was on my head, and I took out the dog this morning, and I was out in grass there at our apartment, and there were trees around, and I've got this on my mind, and so I'm like, okay, how many birds can I count? And I counted, and quickly I counted 8 birds, which are hard to do because they're moving about, flitting about all the time. I counted 8 birds, but then I heard birds chirping that I couldn't see. And then there are all kinds of birds that probably aren't chirping and that are nested somewhere or hiding somewhere I couldn't see. I mean, and that's standing at one place. Can you imagine how many birds there are on this planet? How many little birds there are on this planet, like a sparrow? So Jesus is using the argument from the least to the greatest. If God sees all the little birds and God cares for them, he most definitely cares even more for you. So I want to use another bird illustration, but I want to flip it. from a different perspective. Years ago, Lori and I were over in England on an anniversary trip, and we visited one of these estates, sort of like Biltmore, but it was not as nice as Biltmore, but it was an interesting place. And they had a bird of prey show. It's a way these estates try to keep, you know, money coming in and stuff. And they had a bird of prey show. And they had these hawks and these falcons, and they had one of these big owls, and these birds would fly around. They would do these tricks. They brought out this one hawk. It's about this big. And they turned it loose, and it started circling and climbing like this. And it got so high. I don't know how high it was. It was hundreds of feet. You could just barely see the speck. I mean, just barely see that bird up in the sky. It's a pretty nice day, so you can see far. And the fowler had one of those, you know, leather-covered things on the arm, pulled out a little piece of meat and just went like that. All of a sudden, that bird dove. And within about three and a half seconds, whew, right on that piece of meat off that fowler's arm. Just like that. That one bird can see that little fragment of meat that far away. Well, if that bird can do that, what about the maker who created that bird? Do you know he sees every little detail of your life? He sees every care and burden and frustration and problem and question and challenge in your life. He sees every one of those things. And he cares. So Jesus is teaching, fear not, because he highly values you. And then there's Luke 12. Look with me down later in this chapter in verse 22. Whether this is close in time or Luke just arranges it so. In Luke chapter 12, verse 22, look what Jesus teaches here. Familiar theme, but just a variation of it. And he said to his disciples, again, these are the kingdom people. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you're not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you? Oh, you of little faith. And do not seek what you're to eat and what you're to drink, nor be worried. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. This time Jesus is teaching about not being anxious, specifically about the physical needs of life. And this text talks about that they are legitimate needs of life. But why are we not to be anxious about them? Three things Jesus says here. First of all, there's more to life than food and clothes and houses and jobs, etc. Second of all, anxiety doesn't help. You can't even add 1 hour, no matter how hard you strain and how much you worry and how much you fret. You can't add an hour to your lifespan. So the anxiety does no good. And the third thing he says, that God feeds the ravens and he clothes the lilies. He'll provide for you. This does not mean we don't work, that we just sit around and let things just fall on top of us. No, the Bible strongly teaches the important principle of being one who is responsible and works and is a good steward, it does mean that these things don't deserve our anxiety. That if we seek God's kingdom, and that's what we're focused on, and that is our real objective, and that is where we put our passions, and that is where we put our energy, and that is where we put our hopes and dreams, and that is what's important to us, He's going to take care of all those other things. So, what we have here, again, I'm behind. What we have here in this text, twice, this principle. What does Jesus teach as the underlying point in both of these readings about fear and anxiety? They can be set aside when you realize, when you embrace, when you understand of how much more value you are than all these other things. Why do we have anxiety? We have it, okay? We have it. Why? Well, we believe things are out of control. Our control. It's not going the way we want them or the way we're trying to steer them. We're uncertain of what's going to happen to us. We're not sure we can manage what's going to be thrown at us. We fear that we're going to have some kind of need or problem or burden that we can't handle. And so it's just like taking strands and you twist them and you make a rope, and then you take the rope and you tie it into a knot. What happens to us mentally, what happens to us emotionally, is that we start getting twisted and we get tied up into a knot, and we're just so tense that we're just balled up. What's the antidote to that? Knowing that the God of the universe, who is the universal judge of all people, the God who has complete and perfect knowledge of all things, the God who daily demonstrates His care and provisions for simple things like birds and flowers, that God highly values us. He cares for us, and He is going to help us. And knowing that God, and knowing He cares, of how much value He places on us, that can dispel anxiety. Yeah, there are times we're not able to meet our needs. There are times where we have huge problems and we face great difficulties. But God sees, He values, He's going to provide, He's going to find a way to help. This is fundamental to being in God's kingdom. We humans bounce between two dangerous extremes. One is pride. We're so full of ourselves. We think we've got it under control. We're going to rule our own destiny. And with pride, the problem is we're tempted to rebel and just do whatever we want to do. The other extreme is that we see ourselves as worthless. I can't do anything right. My life's just a mess. My life is not going anywhere. I'm just alone and nobody cares. And what happens there is we're tempted to despair and give up and look for the wrong things to fill us up, or just out of just sheer frustration, just destroy ourselves because we think we're worthless anyway. And sometimes we bounce between the two, like a ball in a pinball machine. Sometimes in the same day, we're just back and forth. Either being so full of ourselves, we rebel, or so we feel so invaluable, we just give up. The fact that Jesus keeps referencing in verse 7 and 24 and 28, you are more important than sparrows or ravens. And if God takes care of lilies and clothes them, He's going to take care of you. You're more valuable than sparrows and ravens and lilies. It's not that we're just one organism among trillions of organisms on this planet. as a human being made in the image of God, you're valuable. This is not culturally in vogue, because the value of the day says, you know, all living things have equal worth. Well, this text says that God cares for the little birds and for the flowers. But this text also says that we are of more value. It's not true that we're just one organism among many and we're all equal. That's not true. Birds and flowers are precious to God. He designed and made them and He cares for them. But you're even more precious to God than some bird or some lily. That's the antidote to anxiety. That's it. So I want you to consider four keys to overcoming anxiety and fear by embracing the fact that God highly values you. Right from these readings here. First of all, this value Jesus is talking about is not based upon some innate self-esteem. The world tells us to believe in yourself. Believe you can do anything. Okay, now come on. No. I was a kid when the Apollo program was really ramped up, and I had a little toy astronaut, you know, I could bend his arms. And I sort of thought how neat it would be to be an astronaut. There's no way I'd ever be an astronaut. I have motion sickness. I take a pill when I fly in a plane. I love to fly. More about flying later. There was no way I could be an astronaut. Because of my inner ear and how my body's put together, I can't go on an ocean vessel. Forget it. Lori ever takes a cruise, she's on her own. I'm not paying that kind of money to be green. I could never be an astronaut. The problem with this idea that just believe in yourself and innate, you got to tell yourself you're valuable, is that oftentimes you don't feel that way. You don't feel valuable. Sometimes you get up and you just feel rotten about yourself. And sometimes we're right. We look at ourselves honestly and we see faults and failures and stupidity and rebellion and sin and weakness. And we look at ourselves sometimes and it's like there's not a whole lot to feel good about there. That's not what Christ is talking about. He's not talking about this self-teaching, the self-talk where you tell yourself, I'm valuable. No, this is listening to God, not listening to yourself. And God tells you, you're valuable. And that's the best value marker of all. After all, He's the all-knowing, almighty ruler. He's got the authority to cast souls into hell. So if He says you're valuable, you're valuable. And when you say to yourself or other people, you're not valuable, you're basically picking an argument with God. It's not true. Your value is not dependent on how valuable you feel or how much you tell yourself you're valuable. It's listening to God. And this value is not based upon your unique abilities and accomplishments and performances. It's interesting when you hear entertainers interviewed, actors, musicians. And it's amazing sometimes, even the most accomplished ones, how they'll refer to how they feel toward applause. That when they're on stage and they get applause, and it makes them feel. And sometimes they'll say something like, when you're up there and you do this and people applaud, it's just there's nothing like that. I think that's really sad. Nameless people who don't know you. And that's the basis of them saying, well done, that you have value. And it's a sad plight to be obsessed with impressing people who don't know you. And it's not much better to be obsessed with impressing people who do know you. It's a very frustrating and unfulfilling life to rely on other people for your value. Now, I think there's a place, we're told in the Bible, to encourage one another. I think there's a place to encourage one another and appreciate one another and praise one another. It's very important. There's a place for parents to do that with their children. You know, a child, you know, drops the crayons on the piece of paper and the mom picks it up and says, this is beautiful. I'm putting it on the refrigerator. Okay. And it's just this constant thing of parents telling their children, you did great, you're so wonderful, you just did well here. Don't do that with your kid. It's great to praise them for things, but don't limit it there. What you've got to do with your child is tell them they're valuable because God values them. Amen. You need to tie their value to God, not you praising them, because one day you're not going to be around. One day they're going to walk into an office and the boss is going to sit down and look across the table and say, that is the worst report we've ever had in 10 years here. What were you thinking when you designed that report? And then how's that kid going to feel? If they know God loves them and God values them, they're going to be like, I need to do better, I guess. If they're always dependent on other people telling them they're valuable because of some accomplishment or performance, they're going to be crushed. We've got to link our value to God. We all struggle with wanting other people's approval. But the best thing to have is God's. Him accepting us. It's living in his kingdom and led by his son. And your affirmation doesn't come by some skill you've mastered or some performance you've nailed or some degree you've earned or some promotion you've been granted or some big check someone's handed you. That's not why you have value. It doesn't matter what you do for a living and how many trophies you have on the shelf and plaques on the wall and money in the bank. And there are plenty of people who have tons of those things and they're miserable and they have constant fear and anxiety. It's inaccurate to base your value there. It's unreliable to put your value there. God is why you have value. Of how much more value you are than sparrows and lilies. He designed, he made you. He's called you to come into his kingdom. By his providence, he's given you the life that you have. You matter to God because he says so. And God's the one we should want to please. God's the one that we should listen to. He's the one that deserves our loyalty. There's so many things interlaced in Luke chapter 12, including here on that point, where in Luke chapter 12, verse 4, Jesus says, I tell you, friends, don't fear those who kill the body. And then he says down in verse 8, and I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before men, the Son of Man also will acknowledge before the angels of God. But the one who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. We have several statements in the Gospels and examples in the Gospel of people who would not believe in Jesus because they were fearful of what others would say about them. Christ is saying, care what I think about you. Be loyal to me. Why? Because he's the one that really values us. We also learn from these texts here in Luke 12 that the freedom from anxiety is not found in understanding how everything works out. In knowing that everything's going to work just this way, and with that knowledge and understanding, I have rest and peace. No. Freedom from anxiety is found in faith in God's care and seeking his kingdom. But we operate under that premise a lot, okay? And I feel sort of an authority on this subject today. I'm ashamed to say. I think I know what I'm talking about. Because I've been there. I've messed up on this. And what this is teaching us is it's not in knowing everything that's happening and how it's all going to work out and being under control here where there is freedom from anxiety. That's not where it's at. We operate on the premise that if I can control things and know exactly how it's going to work out, I'm not going to be anxious. Well, good luck with that, because that's impossible. That's an impossible standard for anxiety-free living. For instance, you get on an airliner. You got to go back there and take a seat. Matter of fact, you got to go back there and strap yourself in and sit there and go nowhere. You can't even get into the cockpit. You walk into the plane, you get to peek in there, and then you got to go sit down. They shut that door. And those fellas fly that plane. You don't get to go up in the control tower at the airport or one of the centers they have spread out through the United States, the FAA centers, where they're controlling the traffic. You don't get to go in there and look at what's going on, have everybody explain everything to you and predict and show you what's going to happen, and you get to weigh in on it. You don't get that. You got to trust the pilots and trust the controllers. Several years ago, Lori and I were flying down to Tampa from the D.C. area, and we connected through Atlanta, and actually we were on the way back. We'd gone down to see our daughter in Florida. We were on the way back. We're flying in a fairly small airliner, and we were toward the back, and it was propelled by two engines around the tail section of the plane. And we were coming in for a landing in Atlanta, and we were just a couple of hundred feet off the deck. And all of a sudden, and I love to fly. I got to take that little pill, but I love to fly. And I want the window seat, which helps with the motion thing. But I love to watch everything and how it all operates. And he gets really close to the touchdown, and all of a sudden he levels out. And then he gives it thrust. And he starts, he keeps going. And I'm like, oh, we're aborting the landing. Never had that before. And that was a little bit, okay. Now, we found out later, because he tells us when we get to the gate, that somebody was where they were not supposed to be. Some aircraft was in the way, or somewhere where there was going to be a risk of a collision on the ground or something. So he had to abort the landing. He was not clear. But the real problem was when he aborted the landing, I thought, okay, we're just going to circle around and come back. He started giving it thrust, revving up those engines, and the engines had already been making funny noises. Then they really started sounding funny. And they were doing this. And the plane was doing this. He was struggling to get altitude to pull out of pulling out of the aborted landing. And as we got past the runway, back over, buildings and everything, we weren't that high. And Lori and I, our hands were just like this. And I thought to myself, I'm okay to die. I hate for this for Hannah. I mean, really, that's the only time in my life I ever had that kind of. So he finally got a little altitude. We finally got up. We circled around, came back, landed. We got to the gate. He said, sorry, folks, for the detour. We had somebody where they were not supposed to be. It's all he said. We got off the plane. We're fine. After a while, I thought, that probably was worse than it looked. Until some weeks after that, I ran into my friend who worked for the FAA, who worked for years as an air traffic controller, has a degree in aeronautics. Was a pilot himself for a while, was now at that point in administration for the FAA. And I said, hey, let me tell you about this incident in Atlanta the other day. And I tell him. And I said, I guess that wasn't as bad, as I probably feared. And he said, well, he said, you had two of the elements of an accident. He said, one, there is something unexpected that happened and the pilot had to respond. Two, sounds like to me he was having some mechanical issues. He said, when accidents happen, and he'd been involved in investigating accidents, he said, it's like Swiss cheese, the holes lined up. And it's those three things. Something unexpected happens, like weather or somebody in the way. And then there's a mechanical issue. He said, the third aspect is pilot response. He said, your pilot did everything just right. Then I really got scared when he told me that. Jesus says in Luke 12, verse 28, but if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today, and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you? Oh, you of little faith. If we can trust airline pilots, and air traffic controllers, we can trust God. If we trust bridges and engineers and buildings and architects, we can trust God. They have a very good track record, not perfect, but have a good success rate, and we trust them. God has a perfect success rate. And all you have to do is look at the lilies and the birds. You can trust God. We need to realize that anxiety about our physical lives is really a form of materialism. We sometimes talk about the problem of being materialistic. It's funny because not only in the confines of those of us who are spiritually oriented and we want to serve God, even sometimes you hear this outside of religious realms, spiritual realms, people talking about, you know, being materialistic. And that's a problem. And right smack between these two texts about fear and anxiety is an incident and a parable. We read about this in Luke 12, verse 13. Someone in the crowd, like in the middle of this teaching that Jesus is giving, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And then he tells the story. There was this farmer who had great harvests, and he says, "I'm going to tear down my old barns, build new and bigger barns, and I'm going to have abundance to enjoy for years and years." And that very night, his soul was required of him, indicates that his life came to an end. That very night, before he could build the barns and enjoy all that harvest. And then Jesus says in verse 21, "So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." I would have you to consider how that is a prime text when we study about materialism and covetousness. This is one of the prime texts we go to. And it's right between the texts about fearing God, not man, and understanding that God cares for sparrows, but you're even way more important than sparrows. And then Jesus comes back to the idea of anxiety and ties it to anxiety about life's possessions. And those statements we just read in Luke 12, 13, 14, 15, and verse 21, plow over with me again some statements we just read and look at the similarities. It's striking, the similarities. Luke 22, he said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, don't be anxious about your life, what you eat, nor about your body, what you put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing." And then further than what we've read, starting in verse 31, which we have, 31 says, "Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the needy, provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where there is no thief that approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Do you see the link to the teaching in the parable about the rich fool? Life is more than just your stuff. And you need to take your stuff and use it in a way that when all your stuff is gone and your physical life is over, you've made an investment in heaven. You've made an investment that pays off for eternity. Another form of materialism, besides just wanting to make a lot of money and loving your money, another form of materialism is to be too focused, even obsessed, about our clothes and foods and houses. Because what is materialism but elevating it as the source of your fulfillment in life? How much of your day is spent not merely tending to your physical needs that we must do every day, but heavily focused on those physical needs, food and clothing and house. How much stress and worry do we have about these things? You know, you watch these home improvement shows, and they're fascinating, and I like some of them in part because they're, you know, typically pretty clean. But they're fascinating to take these old places and fix them up and things like that. And I think it's fascinating to watch what they do. But there is oftentimes an underlying and sometimes an overt statement that says, oh, look at this. Look at this house that's been redone. Or look at this place that we've made. We're going to be so happy here. Oh, you'll be so happy here. You're going to be able to lay back here and enjoy the lounge and read your books and go in the backyard and enjoy the barbecue. Oh, it's just going to be so wonderful here. Houses leak. Houses deteriorate. Paint flakes off. Carpets wear. Appliances break down. Just like clothes wear out, and just like after you've had a fine, delicious meal, later on, you're hungry again. They don't last. And real living is more than these things. And investing in the heavenly kingdom, that's treasure that lasts. Again, materialism occurs when we think our security and our satisfaction will come through the fixed physical. And we become fixated on the earthly and the physical to be satisfied and happy. But there's a better way. And there's a way where we can also just drop that anxiety that always goes with that kind of living and thinking. There's a better way. There's a higher goal to obtain. There's a more enriching experience. And Jesus states it in verse 31. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. We'll have what we need. It's like the sparrows and the ravens and the lilies. Besides that, you're way more important than they are. Have you ever thought about how can God care for so many? There are all these people down here on earth scurrying around. I mean, how many people can you keep up with in your life and tend to? How many people can you manage in your life and provide for? I mean, we look at somebody who's got five kids and we're like, I don't know how they do it, kind of thing. Look how many kids God has. Jesus knows how you can do it. Because Jesus had been setting for eternity right at the right hand of the Father. And he came down to tell us, oh, he cares so much about you. He'll take care of you. You know why? God can have such intimate concern for all of us because he's God. The one who has infinite knowledge, the one who has unlimited power, also has infinite concern for us and the ability to unleash that power as we need it. He's God. So why should we fear? What a tender statement. What a touching statement Jesus makes in the 32nd verse where he says, fear not, little flock. There are some people then and some people now who have hundreds or thousands of sheep in their flocks. But here's a fella. He's got six sheep. How important are those sheep to him? They're everything. They're his livelihood. How much does he keep up with them? When I was growing up, we had cows. We had a little herd. We kept anywhere from about 4 to 8 or 10 cows, beef cows. We had names for them. We knew them. We knew, okay, we don't see the black one. Okay, our favorite one. We don't see Molly. Where's Molly? Okay. How does God look at us? We're part of his little flock. This little precious flock. And we're little. but we belong to the great shepherd. And he has great love for us. We're his. We're a little sheep, but we're his sheep, the great shepherd. And it pleases him, as Jesus says here, to give you the kingdom. It pleases him to give us the best way to live, to give us entrance into the kingdom of heaven, which means a life without fear and anxiety. That's what God wants for you. This text, the texts that we've read here from Luke 12 are bookended. They're bookended with Jesus first saying, friends, I tell you. And then he says at the end, fear not, little flock. Friends, little flock. Do you see that tenderness? That's what God wants for you. He wants to befriend you and bring you into his little flock. So Brother Les is going to lead us in another song. And it's an opportunity for any person here who has come to the realization through an understanding of the gospel that you want to become a Christian. Because you know that Jesus Christ is the greatest friend you could ever have. And the best place to be is to be in his flock. So if you're ready to render obedience to the gospel, we encourage you. Or if you have another spiritual need, you can come forward as we all stand together and sing.